This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
It's completely unprecedented. I have never, ever heard of that large a number of security personnel traveling with our president.
That's Roy Stein, a South African security expert on the controversy regarding the large bodyguard contingent for South African President Cyril Ramaphosa in Poland. Details coming up. Also, Uganda's military says it's rescued three students kidnapped during a school massacre. And Zimbabwe's election campaign begins as candidates submit nominations. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. Sudan's paramilitary leader Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, whose forces have been locked in a brutal conflict with the country's army, has apologized for the harm done to the country and people of Sudan from the nine-week-long conflict. In a recorded message released yesterday, Dagalo also denied his forces were involved in the assassination of the West Darfur governor. Nabil Biagio has this report from Washington.
In his first audio recording in weeks, Dagalo regrets the destruction and suffering brought on the Sudanese people as a result of his conflict with the Sudan Armed Forces, which began on April 15.
We sincerely apologize to our people for the physical, psychological, and economic harm caused by the current war, which we neither planned nor sought. Our objective was to defend ourselves and tirelessly work toward removing the former regime that had inflicted oppression and tyranny upon the Sudanese people.
Dagalo addressed ethnic and tribal violence in Darfur and last week's kidnapping and assassination of West Darfur Governor Khamis Abdullah Abubakar. The United Nations and eyewitnesses said RSF soldiers and allied militia were responsible for the killing. He denied the accusation and blamed Sudan's military intelligence for Abubakar's death and promised to investigate the incident.
We extend our apologies for the tragic incidents in the city of Jenena. We pay tribute to the innocent citizens who lost their lives in a tribal conflict there, as well as the late West Darfur State Governor, Khamis Abdullah Abubakar, who was brutally murdered. We strongly condemn the assassination of West Darfur State Governor, Khamis Abdullah Abubakar. In the past 2 days, we have made intensive efforts to calm the situation in Jenena and investigate the circumstances of this incident. While we have obtained accurate information, we are forming an internal investigation committee that will immediately proceed to Jenena to investigate this incident.
Dagalo said he is grateful to the international and regional interlocutors for efforts to mediate the conflict and provide humanitarian assistance to millions of people affected by the fighting.
We extend our deep gratitude and appreciation to the United Nations and its mission in Sudan, the African Union, IGAD, the Quad, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, the United Kingdom, and the United States, and all regional and international organizations. We highly value the efforts of the Sudanese national forces, including political parties, armed struggle movements, professionals, youth, and the labor associations.
Heavy fighting between the RSF and the army resumed in Sudan's capital Khartoum on Wednesday after a 72-hour ceasefire expired on Tuesday. The conflict has killed thousands of people and displaced millions, while the United Nations estimates a record 25 million people, more than half of Sudan's population, now depend on humanitarian aid. For South Sudan in Focus, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
Relations between South Africa and Poland have been strained by an incident that occurred while President Cyril Ramaphosa was traveling as part of the African peace mission trying to end the conflict in Ukraine. Darren Taylor reports.
Zambian President Hakainde Hichilema and Senegal's Macky Sall were accompanied last Friday and Saturday by 12 bodyguards each. Comorian President Azali Assoumani had two. Polish authorities allowed all of them to travel from their stopover in Warsaw to Kyiv to meet Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky on Friday. But Ramaphosa arrived in Poland's capital with more than 100 security operatives, including special forces soldiers.
It's completely unprecedented. I have never, ever heard of that large a number of security personnel traveling with our president.
Rory Steyn is a security expert and former presidential bodyguard. He says when he worked for President Nelson Mandela, the squad he commanded had 12 members. Poland's government says Ramaphosa's bodyguards were also carrying 12 containers of ammunition and firearms, including heavy caliber weapons of war. Given these unusual circumstances, say the Poles, they could not allow the small army of South African security personnel to continue their journey. After a 26-hour delay at Chapan Airport, the guards returned to South Africa. Ramaphosa proceeded to Kyiv and later to St. Petersburg, accompanied by a few officials. Steyn's heard the South Africans neglected to follow protocol.
When we worked with our president, we as the Presidential Protection Unit would tell the Department of Foreign Affairs how many people are traveling and with what weaponry. Then Foreign Affairs within their own structures would contact our embassy or high commission in the country to which we are traveling, and that embassy or high commission will contact the local authorities there to say, these are the people that are coming, and these are the weapons that they wish to bring. Can we please receive authorization? And nobody should leave the shores of South Africa without such authorization.
Pretoria insists the necessary paperwork and protocols were in order. Ramaphosa's security chief has heightened tension by accusing the Poles of racism. He did not, however, explain why the Polish weren't allegedly racist to the other African entourages. The South African government has close ties with Moscow, while Poland supports Ukraine and the West. The United States recently accused Pretoria of supplying weapons to Moscow, which Ramaphosa's office denies. Defense analyst Dean Wingren suggests another reason for the Warsaw standoff. He says Poland bought a consignment of weapons from South Africa last year, but Pretoria is blocking the shipment.
South Africa currently has a policy of not supplying weapons to countries that are in active conflict. Thus, you'll find that South Africa will not export arms to Ukraine. The official policy is that they will not export arms to Russia, but they're also denying Poland arms because they fear that these arms will then be transferred to Ukraine.
At home, the South African government's being pressured to explain the debacle, and opposition parties and the public want to know why Ramaphosa was accompanied by so many guards and why they needed such heavy weaponry. Pretoria, though, is not commenting. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
In Mali, animosity towards the United Nations MINUSMA troops is growing after the government called for their departure. However, some security experts are concerned that a rapid withdrawal would lead to more regional instability and attacks by militants. Reporter Elisia Vokman has more from Tunis.
Mali's military government has denounced the United Nations peacekeeping mission known as MINUSMA, or the Multidimensional Integrated Stabilization Mission in Mali, as a failure. Government said the 10-year-old mission has failed to meet security challenges. MINUSMA's mandate expires on June 30th this year, and Mali's government has demanded that the 15,000 troops depart. However, there are concerns that a rapid withdrawal could risk a rise in violent extremism, especially in the northern cities of Gao and Timbuktu. This is not the first time foreign troops have been called to withdraw. Last year, French troops pulled out. Many analysts have said that Mali is turning away from the West and international community and views Russia as a more reliable security partner in the fight against militants. Andrew Lebovich, a research fellow at the Sahel program at the Klingendael Institute in the Netherlands, explains the background for people's growing frustrations with MINUSMA.
There is somewhat of a similar political narrative to what led to the French withdrawal, particularly an emphasis on sovereignty, on trying to really push international actors out of Mali, and really an insistence on Malian sovereignty not being limited by these actors, or Mali not being judged by external forces, whether France or the UN.
Lebovich says tensions between the military government led by Colonel Assimi Goïta and MINUSMA have been brewing for some time, with the government forces trying to limit the UN troops' activities.
The transitional government, of course, has expressed skepticism about MINUSMA operations, have tried to restrict their overflights and reconnaissance gathering, intelligence gathering, and have also, of course, really severely tried to restrict their human rights monitoring, and quite vigorously protested, particularly after the recent release of the report on the massacre of civilians at Mora in central Mali, which was really kind of the last piece in breaking this this relationship between Mali and MINUSMA.
The UN Human Rights Office last month said Malian and foreign troops killed 500 civilians in Mora last year. Mali's government vehemently denies these claims, saying those killed were terrorists. Mali's public prosecutor's terrorism and transnational crime unit said yesterday the government had filed a complaint against members of MINUSMA. Lebovich says that MINUSMA's impending withdrawal could risk greater insecurity.
That could have implications along the border, or increased implications along the border with Niger, with Algeria, potentially even with Mauritania. And then it can also help continue this process of creating space for jihadist groups in the country, which has already had a really significant impact on the region and on neighboring states over the past several years.
The military has led Mali's government since 2020, but on Sunday it held a referendum on a new constitution to transition towards a civilian administration. However, Lebovich says if insecurity rises, that could make a transition to democracy harder. For Voice of America Africa, I'm Alicia Folkman in Tunis, Tunisia.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. The Ugandan military says it has rescued three of the six students who were kidnapped by suspected Islamist fighters while they massacred 42 people, mostly young pupils. The attackers, believed to be from the Allied Democratic Forces, ADF, a group linked to the Islamic State, stormed the Lubirira secondary school in Mpandwe on Uganda's border with the Democratic Republic of Congo on Friday night. VOA's Douglas Mpuga reached the Uganda's People Defense Force, UPDF spokesman, Brigadier Felix Kulaiju, for details of the rescue.
We're following the attack on the school. The UPDF dispatched a force that pursued the terrorists into DRC, and consequently, during an encounter on Monday with this group, the three were able to be rescued, plus a woman and a child that were not part of the students, but these thugs had kidnapped from elsewhere.
Do we know the state of the other girls who were kidnapped also?
Not as yet. How can you know when they are still with the enemy? Not yet.
So is it confirmed now that ADF was responsible for this murderous attack?
For us, we know ADF, but they were assisted by local collaborators, or I don't know whatever I can call them else.
UPDF has been pursuing ADF for a long time now. In your assessment, are they still a strong force to reckon with, able to do half work like they did last time?
Terrorists do not have to be strong in numbers. They only seek an opportunity, do their act, and disappear again. It's not about strength in numbers. It's either the vigilance of security and the population that deters them, or lack of interest in the affairs around you that enables them to sneak through. Because if you may remember, in December last year, they tried in the areas of Wundibujo. The population was quick to alert the army, and in the end, the entire group was either annihilated or captured. Now here, information came late, and nobody noticed that they are coming, and therefore, the army could not act in time, and that's why they would succeed with this famous act.
So the pursuit of these people is still ongoing?
Absolutely, until we rescue those children. And then we must also destroy this group.
What can you tell us about the collaborators that you have under arrest now?
Well, indeed, they are being investigated. They are being investigated. That's why they are held. And we intend to establish the truth.
Are they part of ADF or they just, what interest did they have in this?
That's what the investigation will establish.
That's Uganda's People Defense Force UPDF spokesman Brigadier Felix Kulaiju. He spoke with VOA's Douglas Mpuga from Kampala. Zimbabwe's courts have been busy today taking nomination applications from candidates seeking to run in the August 23rd elections. Reporter Kudai Zanwashi has more from Harare.
The courts in Zimbabwe were crowded today with politicians filing their bids to run in the August election. The nomination process began despite concerns about high nomination fees, which Parliament approved recently. Some activists say the new fees make it harder for many would-be candidates. Linda Masarira, president of the Labour Economists and Democrats, or LEAD party, was one of them. She couldn't afford to submit her nomination papers.
And we also fight the system that is discriminating against political participation of women in particular, because these candidate nomination fees are too exorbitant. A lot of women have failed even to file for MP seats because they could not afford the $1,000.
She says this sets back the women's movement in Zimbabwe. Many activist groups have said women who typically earn less than men, particularly, are hampered by the new fees. Candidates for president need to pay $20,000, while candidates for parliament need to pay $1,000. Parliament approved the fees, saying they ensure candidates are serious about running. The nomination process closed this afternoon. Leopold Munende is a journalist covering the nomination process. He says the process has not been as smooth as expected.
Well, it's not as clear as we had hoped. What we are getting from some nomination courts across the country is that there are signatures which are different to those which had already been filed in certain papers at the courts. So the courts are demanding that the person who signed the party papers be the one who signs the rest of the other papers.
President Emmerson Mnangagwa, who is running under the ZANU-PF banner, filed his papers at the High Court in Harare. His top challenger is expected to be Nelson Chamisa, leading the Citizens Coalition for Change. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zvinavashe from Harare.
Zambian opposition party leaders have urged the government to stop using state agencies to harass opponents. The opposition alleges that arrests, police brutality, and the detention of opponents are not acceptable in a democracy. Kathy Short reports from Lusaka, Zambia.
Speaking at the joint media briefing Monday, a gathering of more than 10 opposition leaders from various political parties vowed to continue fighting for freedom of expression. New Heritage Party leader Chishala Kateka said they are concerned with the continued arrests of opponents by state agents.
In the past few weeks, we have had a number of opposition political figures arrested, detained, brutalized, and just harassed or intimidated by one wing of the Zambia Security.
Like Kateka, Citizens First leader Harry Kalaba said the opposition will continue offering checks and balances to promote democracy.
Clearly, you can see that the democratic space in this country is fast shrinking. The moment you begin talking, they will want to begin finding reasons to gag you. We will not be stopped. We will choose to speak for the people of Zambia.
But the permanent secretary of the Ministry of Information and Media, Kennedy Kalunga, said the opposition claims are baseless. In a statement, Kalunga said law enforcement agencies in the country operate with the highest levels of professionalism and integrity and are guided by comprehensive protocols that ensure fair treatment of all individuals in custody. He reiterated the government's commitment to upholding the rights of every citizen, irrespective of their political affiliation. For VOA News, I'm Kathy Short in Lusaka, Zambia.
Greece is under growing pressure to launch an investigation into the June 13th sinking of a vessel that was carrying up to 750 migrants. At least 82 people died and hundreds are still missing, including many women and children. Most were from Egypt, Syria, and Pakistan. Henry Ridgewell reports.
In the port of Piraeus Sunday, hundreds of protesters marched on the headquarters of the Greek Coast Guard and the European Union's border agency Frontex, holding aloft banners that said murderers. Greece's deadliest migrant shipwreck in years has sparked accusations that the authorities did not do enough to help. The boat set sail from Libya with up to 750 people on board. This footage was taken from a Frontex aircraft, showing the vessel off Greece on the morning of June 13th. The Greek Coast Guard said at first that the boat was on a steady course towards Italy, so it did not intervene. It later said it tried to aid the migrant boat by attaching a rope, but claimed the migrants untied it. Footage was taken from a ship that had diverted to help the migrants later on June 13th. The crew offered water and food. The migrant boat appears to restart its engine. The vessel sank later that night in Greek waters. Many survivors say the boat had lost power for several hours before it sank. The United Nations has called for an investigation, a demand echoed by human rights groups, who say survivors' testimonies contradict the Coast Guard's version of events. Kondylia Gogou is from Amnesty International.
The survivors saying that the rope was given, and the cause in their they understand that the cause of the incident was that rope tying them and then the ship taking the wrong turn and sinking. We think that it's really essential that a prompt, thorough and independent investigation and effective takes place. You can see from the aerial pictures too that this is an unseaworthy vessel. So you're obliged to intervene. This is your duty. And that there's a failure. There's a delay.
Greece continues to insist that the migrants did not ask for help and were not in danger until the boat sank. Greek police have arrested 9 suspects, all Egyptian nationals who were believed to be on the boat. Critics say Europe's migration policy is also to blame. Again, Amnesty's Kondylia Gogou.
As long as we don't have sufficient policies in the EU for safe and legal routes, this kind of dangerous journeys will continue.
Survivors were taken to this migrant camp on the mainland. Amid the grief, there have been occasional moments of joy as survivors are reunited with loved ones. But hundreds of people are missing, presumed dead. Their loved ones are demanding truth and justice. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Cornelius Tanner, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1. Then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat.
African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at